312-981-7200. When Carrie Peck joins us, we always get a lot of calls and texts when they tend to stack up at the end of the half hour. So if you have anything that's on your mind about elder law, that is, somebody is now in the will, or somebody's out of the will, or dad has a new girlfriend and we're suspicious about her motives, or maybe it's the siblings who are, you know, squabbling about the checkbook or access. Here's your chance to call 312-981-7200. Carrie Peck with the Peck Ritchie Law Firm is on a phone line. And Carrie, I was actually thinking about you this week when I was reading a story about the Murdochs and the succession-like storyline that is playing out over the Fox News empire. We've talked in the past about the, I think it's called Irrevocable Living Trust that Rupert Murdoch has, and how that may doom Fox News as we know it. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Well, thank you, John. How are you today?
Pretty good. And if I may just follow up on that, the story is that Rupert, who is in his 90s, he's on his fifth wife. She's 30 years his junior. This is the one that came after Jerry Hall. And
right.
But I believe it was wife number two with whom he had a nasty enough divorce that it sounds like he thought, I need to protect the empire, and maybe he didn't want to share it with her. So he created an irrevocable living trust in which, with four of his kids, he would split evenly his estate. Each kid gets 25%. Three of them are center, maybe even left politically, but his oldest son, Lachlan, is very much to the right and agrees with his dad that Fox News should continue to be this conservative voice that it is. Knowing that now, Rupert is trying to get out of that deal, and he has been unable to do so, right?
That's correct. I actually coincidentally read the same article, and it's pretty interesting because, you know, that article gave us a considerably more detail in the behind-the-scenes meetings of the family and the kind of the intrigue of it all. But you're correct. This is a kind of scenario that, while, you know, few people in the world have Rupert Murdoch's money, on a different degree, this is exactly what we see in our law firm every day, in the family intrigue and, you know, the two or three of the kids lining up against one of the other kids and perhaps against mom or dad and trying to persuade mom or dad that they should receive more money and more assets than everybody else in the family. The Murdoch case is quite interesting because, as you know, it's set out in Nevada.
Yeah.
Apparently that's where the documents were done, and that's apparently how the law is interpreted. And they've had a case now, a trial, in front of what they call, I guess, a commissioner out in Nevada, probate commissioner, and he ruled against Murdoch, and now they're taking an appeal. So it is pretty interesting because the balance of the Fox News and the Wall Street Journal and apparently the one of the New York tabloids,
right,
tabloids is in the balance of this decision.
Yeah, Wall Street Journal too. And the essence of an irrevocable living trust is that then nobody can change it, even you, the person that created it, while you're alive and while you have your mental faculties. It's a lockbox you've created, and the key is thrown away, in theory. Is that correct?
Well, that is correct, John. But I, you know, the reality here is that very few people create irrevocable trusts.
Yeah.
You know, the Murdochs obviously had reason for doing that. Most people, and we recommend, create revocable trusts that are amendable, changeable, as long as the individual has the mental capacity to do so.
Yeah, I figured as much. I mean, but then where in this, boy, we talk about this all the time, Carrie, but help us out. So you have a will, you have an estate plan. Now you're describing for us a revocable living trust. What is the difference between the trust and those other financial products or legal products?
Sure. The standard estate plan today, John, includes what is a revocable living trust, a will, power of attorney for health care, and a power of attorney for property. The purpose of using a revocable living trust is that in Illinois, if you die with assets in excess of $100,000 in your name alone, the law requires a post-death court proceeding called probate. And in order to avoid probate and avoid the delay, avoid the expense, we use a revocable living trust in which an individual puts all of their assets into the trust. So it's the John Williams Revocable Living Trust, dated today's date.
Yeah.
You can change it, you can amend it, as long as you're competent, and you avoid probate. It's really a good device. It's also good for should you become, disabled and can no longer manage your assets. You've got a trustee, a successor trustee to take over. You're named trustee of your own trust. So it's, you don't give up the power to control your assets and distribute them to your loved ones.
So how is that different than a will?
A will in conjunction with a revocable living trust is what we call, typically lawyers call, a pour-over will. So any assets that are not put into the trust pour over upon death. But you still need that $100,000 threshold below. If you don't use a revocable living trust, and many people don't, a last will and testament is, in essence, the dispositive document that says, I, John Williams, leave my assets to my wife, my children, in disproportionate shares. I name an executor to manage my estate. And if your assets aren't all in joint tenancy or all payable on death, and any of them are over $100,000, then we're back into that court proceeding. So, a will could be a standalone document. A revocable living trust requires that we have both a pour-over will and a revocable living trust.
Okay, 312-981-7200 is the number. Nancy had a question about being the executor. Nancy, you're on WGN Radio with Carrie Peck. What can we do for you, Nancy?
Okay, Carrie, I want to ask you, my parents had bought property in Naples, Florida. They have both passed away. My brother was the executor. He's passed away. My brother and I now need to know where we go with this. All I have is a deed. Everybody says Naples is up and coming. Great property. Where do I go? How do I find out to get the property put in our name? Or you tell me.
Well, you're likely to have to open a probate estate to probate the piece of property in Naples and then have it distributed to presumably you. Did your parents have, they had a will that provided he was executor, but it could also provide how the assets were distributed, what proportions?
Everything. I mean, they've been dead 30-plus years.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, my brother died almost 7 years ago, so, I wouldn't even know where my father might have had a will or whatever, and like I said, my brother.
Is this a problem with you finding the paperwork, Nancy?
Yeah, I guess so. Like I said, I think I've got a deed for the property. I just kind of want to know where we go to try to...
Well, wouldn't the county have a listing of who is listed as the owner of the property or something like that?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Yeah.
You were asking the wrong.
Do you have it? Nancy, do you have a deed?
Yes.
Okay. And the deed presumably is in both your parents' names?
I don't have it in front of me. I can go get it, but...
No. Okay. So... my suggestion actually is off air tomorrow. Give me a call and we'll talk about it. Okay?
Yeah. Well,
I'm licensed in Florida. I can help you.
This sounds like the sort of headache I'm glad people like you have and not me, Carrie, because I'm just trying to get my tax papers together to file my taxes, and I think there's four of them I need, and I can't find one. So this must be the kind of conundrum or nightmare that you run into a lot of times, right? Is it paper search?
We run into it every day of the week, every day of the week.
You sound like you enjoy it, too. Let's go to Bob next. You're on WGN. Good luck, Nancy, and I'll give Carrie's contact information in a minute. Bob, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Thanks. Got a question on a transfer on death document. I'm wondering, the witnesses that are named obviously probably cannot be the beneficiaries. And then I'm wondering on the notary, whose name are they really certifying there? Is it just the person who's creating the document or the witnesses as well?
No, the notary is acknowledging that they observe the what's called the grantor or the creator of the lawyers call it a TODI, T-O-D-I, transfer on death instrument. So the notary is acknowledging that he or she saw the two witnesses and saw the individual create the transfer on death document. And you're right, the beneficiaries, if the beneficiaries are the witnesses, the document is likely no good. If beneficiaries or heirs witness a will, the document is no good. So,
oh, really? Because I could imagine the beneficiaries standing around, grandpa or mom or dad, going, all right, let's do the will. We're going to help you with that. But if you're the recipient of the estate, then you can't be the witness?
That's correct. You need to be disinterested witnesses. You know, if you came to my office, the two witnesses would be two of our paralegals or assistants because, you know, you do not want an intra-family document of that nature. It's invalid.
No intra-family. And then so basically I have to get the person who's creating the document and the two witnesses, all of us together in front of the notary at the same time.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Kerry Peck is the elder law attorney who joins us frequently on WGN answering these kinds of questions that families have. Kerry, lots of phone calls and lots of text messages for you. Can you take a few more for us?
Absolutely, Jim. My pleasure.
Hey, Kerry, a recent conversation with friends, they were saying if my parents have a will versus a trust, why does it have to go to probate? You spoke about that a minute ago, but can you just briefly respond to that?
Sure. The answer is if your parents own assets, if mom passed or dad passed, if they own assets in their name alone, in one of them, in excess of $100,000, again, not in joint tenancy, not payable on death scenarios. The law requires, so mom owns, a brokerage account in excess of $100,000, the law requires that a probate estate be opened post-death. And depending on what county you live in, you know, in Chicago, it's the Daly Center, and every county's got their own courthouse and their own probate judges that hear these post-death probate proceedings.
Right. But then, well, let me ask, let's bring Lisa on here because she has a question that's, I think, somewhat related to that. Lisa, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hi, good morning. So my sister just passed away 2 weeks ago. She doesn't really have anything. She has three small bank accounts. She has a pickup truck, a motorcycle, and a camper. All we have written is she was a truck driver, so all we wrote up was, hey, if anything happens to me, Lisa's my executor. Am I going to end up in probate?
Well, I don't know what the three small accounts total up to, but
under 10.
Okay, so then if the motorcycle and the camper are, you know, keep you below 100,000, then the answer is no.
Oh, yeah.
And you're likely to need to prepare what's called a small estates affidavit, Lisa. Okay.
Okay.
In order to get access to those accounts, in order to transfer the motorcycle, in order to transfer the camper.
How does she do that? I mean, I know she could call you.
Thank you.
An attorney would help her do that.
She's going to need a lawyer to help her do that.
Kerry, Lisa, while you're on the line. So
yes.
It sounds like you guys didn't have an official document drawn up by an attorney. You didn't even do it online with those forms.
Correct.
You guys just agreed. Maybe it's in writing. How how much weight does that carry, Kerry?
Very little. None. Absolutely none. Okay.
Oh, no.
If a document isn't executed in compliance with the law, it basically has no validity
at all.
But
this isn't entirely unusual, so there is a remedy. I mean, the state anticipates this. That's what you were talking about, right, Kerry?
It is. The state does anticipate it. Lisa, do you have other siblings, or does your sister pray for your loss?
I do, and I do, and they all understand. They all know that I was the executor for years now, so there's no problem with any of my family.
But there might be a problem with the law, is the point.
might be a problem with the law, and I don't know if anybody thought about it, but you're likely to have to share all the money with everybody and sell the camper and sell the motorcycle and share the proceeds. So,
but that could be a conversation. But what if the, I think some of us have done this. You want Dad's motorcycle? Fine. You keep the motorcycle. And I'll take the camper, and we're not going to go online and figure out what they're worth. I want the motorcycle. You want the camper. We're good. I mean, that could happen too, right, Kerry?
That could happen. I mean, if a family can work it out, that could happen. But they're not going to get access to the bank accounts because a bank's not going to give them any money without complying with the formalities of the law. I mean, you know, the individual's dead. So,
Kerry Peck's number is 312-201-0900. Lisa, I hope you're writing this down. You can also visit peckritchie.com, 312-201-0900. Lots of calls and texts. Producer Pete, where do we go next? Marge is next over on line two. Marge, you're on WGN. Go ahead.
Okay. So what you were saying is that assets not in a trust, if they total $100,000 or more, then it has to go through probate?
Yeah, typically, yes. But it may be also a standalone asset. So, but it depends on how what the interpretation is. Usually it's a standalone. But
what if they have named beneficiaries?
Then you can avoid probate. So named beneficiaries would either be a payable on death account or perhaps an asset in joint tenancy. John and you own the asset. You pass away, Marge, it goes to John. So there are methods of avoiding probate, even in excess of $100,000. You have to name beneficiaries. You have to name joint tenants. Okay?
Okay, well, what if there are joint tenants and both of them die, but they have named someone as a successor beneficiary?
Well, if it's recorded with a bank or wherever if it's a brokerage account, then it's probably okay. You can't do it, informally. You have to advise the financial institution on their forms,
right,
who the successor beneficiaries would be.
Marge, good luck to you. About that, though, this listener said, is a revocable trust necessary if there's just one child, mom, dad, adult child scenario? I get it. Who else is it going to go to? What about that, Kerry?
Well, it depends on how much there is in property, John. The reality is that if you want to avoid probate, having one child or 10 children is not outcome determinative. The issue is, do you want to avoid the post-death probate proceeding?
Well,
and
let me ask you this. What's so bad about probate? I mean, is it just that it takes more time to get your hands on the assets, or is there an expense because the state is involved?
Well, the expense involved is that you have to pay filing fees to the county. You have to hire a lawyer and pay legal fees. And it's going to be a delay. I mean, there's no question. It also gives creditors, whether they be credit card creditors or vendors or medical providers, an opportunity to file a claim against the estate. Let's assume you die, open a probate estate, and you owe a Visa and MasterCard $2,500 apiece. They're going to come in and file a claim. In most scenarios with a revocable living trust, the credit card companies don't have a forum to file a claim. So that's also a big benefit.
Real quick, Kerry, I've loaned more than $100,000 to family members in my name only. I have a revocable trust. Should I put the loan in the name of the trust to avoid probate?
Yeah, I would say that you should put in the trust, should say, I, John Doe, have loaned Mary $10,000, John $10,000, Sam $10,000, et cetera, and I reduce their share by the amount of the loan. So that's very important. Otherwise, it's going to cause havoc, chaos, and aggravation amongst the family members.
Those are some of your partners, havoc, chaos, and aggravation, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely, every single day of the week.
Elder law attorney Kerry Peck, peckritchie.com, 312-201-0900. I'm sorry we couldn't get to half of the calls and text messages. Kerry, let's do this again next month.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
Kerry will join us again. You can join him anytime. 312-201-0900.